Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the milk of human kindness is not pasteurized right after this. You know, under the terms of a contract which was called the Old Covenant, it was negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai, you and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits. Benefits such as rain in due season, multiplied gold, silver, herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, President George Bush said when he was running for office that what Americans wanted, though, was jobs, jobs, jobs. You know, that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and the Ten Commandments. All of these authorities recognized that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not now and never has been measured in employment, and particularly not mentioned or measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money is in private business. The money is in sales. It's not in public business, and it's certainly not in jobs, jobs, jobs. That's why I contend that it's time that you and I cash in on our inheritance and learn how to collect those benefits of that old covenant contract, and to collect those benefits in something of substance like gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil, in real property, instead of this credit, debt, usury, inflation, and worthless paper that we're being offered. Now, if you'd like to learn more about how to do just that, why don't you call for more information on our CD Homeschool for Adults on our free general law CD package. Do that at the same time. Doesn't cost you anything. That free home package now is a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives machine, the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Then go to the archives page. Hey, we're talking about a wild new subject here called raw milk. In the last program, I showed you the Orwell program called Doublespeak or Newspeak. It's deception is what it is. It's where we tell you up is down and down is up and right is left and left is right, and we get you to believe that. And we do that by teaching you from kindergarten up that that's the way the game is played. And you'll believe it because that's what you've always been taught and told. Very few people ever go behind the scenes like the Wizard of Oz, you know, and say, let me see what's behind the curtain. Most people are content to take things in the status quo the way it is, the way it's been presented. And that's the way it is with pasteurized milk. And so if you say to somebody, oh, I don't drink pasteurized milk, I drink raw milk, those people will gag. You know, they'll say, oh, my God, surely you know you're smarter than that, Mr. Gordon. You have just been totally deceived here. This is crazy. Well, the guy that wrote the book now, remember his name is William Campbell Douglas, M.D. He's a medical doctor, and he took on the subject matter of pasteurized versus raw milk. And I gave you an introduction last time. You know, there is some truth to this thing of raw milk kills people. And the bottom line was, dirty raw milk killed people, and lots of them. The solution to that would be the opposite of dirty raw milk would be clean raw milk. Now, clean raw milk doesn't kill anybody. But producing clean raw milk takes time, effort, and energy. It takes work. And we do not want to work, especially if you're a dairyman, especially if you're in the cattle business. You don't want to work. So we're going to produce dirty milk. So what do? To keep the dirty milk from killing people, we pasteurize it. So what we have today is dirty, pasteurized milk produced in a clean environment with stainless steel. And it's a deception, and that deception is killing people. What we have traded is infectious diseases, like typhoid fever, for heart disease and stroke, degenerative disease. And then we're killing far more people with degenerative disease than we have ever killed with infectious disease. Not to say that we shouldn't clean up our milk. I think that we should have clean milk, clean raw milk. And so does Dr. Douglas. And in Chapter 2, he calls it utter, U-D-D-E-R, destruction. He says this is going to be an important chapter. It's the heart of the book, and we're going to divide it into Part 1 and Part 2. Now, remember, when I review a book here, boys and girls, I can't give you all the information in the book. This isn't, you know, story time. This isn't where we're going to read the book. But I'm going to read to you certain excerpts. I'm going to quote certain excerpts out of the book that proves the point. First thing we need to do is to tickle your curiosity. You already know that drinking raw milk is the kiss of death. I mean, it's like the mafia don kissing you. You know that death is imminent. All right, now with that out of the way, could there be an exception to the rule? And Dr. Douglas says, yeah, there's an exception to the rule, so let me tell you what it is. Now, a friend of mine in Florida, he says, was talking to the wife of a dairyman at a party. My friend, conscious of the myriad of problems associated with pasteurized, homogenized milk, asked this dairyman's wife if their dairy would supply her family with raw milk. The woman blanched white and stiffened, certainly not. We would never touch the stuff. The dairyman's wife was offended and embarrassed that such a question would be asked in polite company. When someone that close to milk production has such an emotional and deep-rooted prejudice against fresh raw milk, the pasteurizers, along with most public health departments and doctors, have indeed convinced the people that heat treatment of milk, called pasteurization, is as essential as fluoridation of your drinking water. But, as with fluoridation, not everybody is convinced. There is a small band of determined and dedicated dairy farmers and nutritionists who continue to work for the return of fresh, untreated raw milk. I'll pause here and make an observation. If I could buy good, clean raw milk, I wouldn't milk my own cows. And that's because it ties me down, and it's demanding, and you know, it takes time, effort, and energy, and I'm just as lazy as sin. And I would buy it if I could. But since I can't buy it, then the only other solution is for me to produce my own. Otherwise, I have to buy what's been put out there for me. And an iconoclast doesn't do that. So I'm not going to buy pasteurized milk because that's all that's available. I'm going to go out and I'm going to create and produce my own. That's why here at the dairy, we actually produce clean milk cows. And we sell clean milk cows. Now, just for your information, see, you can't buy a clean cow in America. And that's because all of the clean cows in America, when they go through the sale barn, have to be vaccinated. They have to be vaccinated. Once you take a cow over to the sale barn, that cow cannot leave the sale barn without vaccination. So if you had a clean cow, once you run her through the sale barn, you can't. She's not clean anymore. Now, in addition to that, everybody in America is feeding GMO feeds to their cows. And they're feeding their cows on land that has that has been fertilized with chemicals and has been dosed liberally with chemical pesticides. So the idea that you're going to find a clean cow in the United States of America is like finding a chicken with a full set of teeth. I mean, that's just not going to happen. Now, there are some private entrepreneurs, this is one of them here, that do have clean cows. For people who want to have clean raw milk, and you need a clean cow to start with. I mean, you can't have a cow that's been vaccinated. You can't have a cow that's got TB, brucellosis, or some other disease. Can you? I mean, you got to start off with clean stock to start with. You can't have cows that have been fed GMO feeds and chemicals and pesticides. And since almost all of the land in America has been subjected, and the feed's been subjected to that, well, then it's damn hard to find a clean cow. So we start here with clean cows, and then we need to produce clean raw milk. Clean raw milk. Now, we can do that if we start off with clean cows. But most of the cows in America aren't clean to start with. That's why we have what we call, in this country, Downer cow syndrome. See, we don't have mad cows over here. That's for you Englishmen. We have Downer cow syndrome over here. Got that? Now, going on, he says, initially, the motivation for pasteurization was anything but altruistic. Unscrupulous dairymen knew that if they heated the milk, it wouldn't sour. A harmless but often gastronomically undesirable state. Heat treatment enabled them to avoid expensive sanitary procedures and to deliver the milk to unsuspecting consumers, apparently fresh. The milk was anything but fresh. It was dead. Having killed most of the enzymes and altered the protein and fat through heat, the milk didn't sour. It rotted, but it doesn't sour. Got that? Now, that milk you've got in the refrigerator that's been pasteurized, that milk does not sour. It rots, as any dead animal tissue will rot. However, the dead milk was usually drunk before the rotting process took place, and no one was the wiser. So, in spite of modern techniques of pasteurization, pasteurized milk is dead milk, which will rot when left standing. People knowledgeable in dairy science at the turn of the century were opposed to heat treatment of milk. They realized that one of nature's perfect foods was being altered from a natural food to a processed, unnatural food. During this period, called the Dark Era by pasteurization zealots, conscientious nutritionists and dairy experts strongly opposed to this new pasteurization process. Realized that the commercial interests were only concerned about the shelf life and not the nutrition in this new adulterated milk. Cholera infantum was a dreaded disease of children in the early 20th century. 5,000 babies died every year from this summer diarrhea, and it was found to be caused by milk contaminated by an excessive number of ordinary dirt bacteria, reported by Dr. Park of the New York City Health Department. In other words, it was just plain dirty milk. Dairymen were producing dirty, raw milk and killed 5,000 babies a year. But instead of requiring these dairies to clean up their act, they turned to the heat treatment of milk. They eradicated the dreaded cholera infantum, but at a terrible price. You see, a steady increase in crib death, infantile allergy, colitis, heart disease, stroke, and sexual impotency, just to name a few of the degenerative diseases that have taken the place of infectious diseases caused by, guess what? Pasteurized milk, which, by the way, God told you, don't do that. Now, as a temporary expedient, while the technologies of sanitation engineering and refrigeration were in the process of development, heat treatment pasteurization was better than nothing. And although the milk was inferior nutritionally and would cause degenerative diseases later in life, at least it would not kill the babies right away. But the milk producers are clinging to outdated methods. In an age of sophisticated sanitation where even horse liniment and toilet paper are made under remarkably clean conditions, the milk industry leans heavily on heat treatment of milk and milk products to cover up sloppy production methods. This is sanitation at the wrong end. The dairymen continue to look backward toward Pasteur and Spallanzini rather than forward toward Coit, Mathis, and Struve, and they continue to destroy the food value of the milk for economic expediency when, technologically, it is no longer necessary. Initially, the dairy industry itself fought the compulsory treatment of heat in the milk. No one likes to change the system because it costs money. Finally, after losing in court, the dairymen caved in and they joined the pasteurization movement. Today, locked into the heat pasteurization system, they will fight equally hard to avoid moving forward to fresh, unheated, clean milk production. The industry continues to protect us against disease conditions of 100 years ago, and in the process, they destroy the value of the milk and kill us with degenerative disease. In the book Milk Pasteurization, Hall and Trout say that perhaps no other single innovation has made such an impact on the food industry as the heat treatment of milk. Within the span of 100 years, the milk industry evolved from almost total obscurity to the giant of the food industry. The flowering of the milk industry is made and was made possible by the parboiling or pasteurization, as it is now called, of milk. This parboiling or heating of milk had no effect on the incidence of tuberculosis caused by milk. You can actually drink milk from a tubercular cow with impunity. And that's because the blood membrane barrier prevents the tubercular bacteria from passing into the milk. It was the tuberculosis-carrying milkers of the cows who infected the milk by coughing into it. So tuberculosis didn't come from the milk, it came from the people milking the cows who had tuberculosis. And the incidence of brucellosis, or undulant fever, contrary to popular opinion, was really not affected by the pasteurization process. And that's because brucellosis is not contracted through milk. It is contracted by association directly with the animals. The farmer or other adult milking the cow would often get brucellosis, but his children who drank the milk from the cows didn't get the disease. The so-called pasteurization process is far from new, and it was done long before Louis Pasteur. In 1782, the Swedish scientist Scheele used heat pasteurization treatment to preserve vinegar. In fact, the earliest recorded incidence of the pasteurization process was actually in 1765 by Spallanzini, who preserved meat through the heat treating process. In 1824, a professor of obstetrics at the University of Pennsylvania, a fellow by the name of William Dews, recommended heating milk to the boiling point, then cooling the milk for infant feeding. He said, in hot weather, it is true, the tendency to decomposition is diminished by boiling the milk. But as all the advantages which may, as a result in the process, can be processed or procured without its being absolutely boiled, it should never be had recourse to. And although Pasteur was given the credit for the parboiling method, and it takes its name of pasteurization from Louis Pasteur, The record does not show that Louis Pasteur ever pasteurized milk. Pasteur succeeded in developing a system of heat application to control fermentation, and thus the preservation of wine. The wine industry was greatly benefited, as he had discovered the method of preventing wine spoilage. He also succeeded in applying this principle to the preservation of beer. Pasteur does indeed deserve credit, as the basic method applied to milk is the same as that Pasteur pioneered for beer and wine. Now, a German by the name of Soxhalt, about 20 years after Pasteur's discovery, applied Pasteur's method to the pasteurization of milk for infant feeding. The process was introduced in the United States in 1889. Nathan Strauss, a wealthy New York philanthropist, was appalled at the mortality of children being fed raw milk. He established milk depots in the city of New York which offered heat-treated milk to children, and the death rate from raw milk fell dramatically in New York as a result of Strauss's efforts. Strauss spread the gospel around the United States and, in fact, the entire world. He was the single most influential man in making pasteurization a universally used and recognized procedure. Hall and Trout, in their book Milk Pasteurization, are extremely laudatory of the pasteurization process, and they obviously believe that pasteurization is one of the greatest boons and inventions ever to come to mankind. The authors list former objections to pasteurization of milk and clearly imply that none of these objections are currently valid. Let's list some of these former objections and let's make some comments on them. First, pasteurization is an excuse for the sale of dirty milk. Two, pasteurization may be used to mask low-quality milk. Three, pasteurization promotes carelessness and discourages any effort to produce clean milk. Four, compulsory pasteurization would diminish the incentive to clean milk production. 5. Heat destroys a great number of bacteria in milk and thus conceals the evidence of dirt. 6. Pasteurization impairs the flavor of milk. 7. Pasteurization diminishes the nutrient value of milk. 8. The milk is devitalized, that is, the vitamins are destroyed. 9. Pasteurization diminishes vitamin content. 10. Pasteurization destroys vitamin C. 11. Calcium and other minerals are precipitated and made unavailable by pasteurization. That's really a good one. Here's what happens. They advertise milk and they say milk is full of calcium. And indeed it is. And they'll brag about it and they'll tell you, you know, Mid-American Dairies or the Humboldt Creamery Association or Golden State Creamery, and say, my God, drink milk, it's full of calcium. And they're not lying to you. Deceiving you, they are, but lying to you, they are not. Milk is full of calcium. And because you drink milk full of calcium, your conclusion would be, well, since I'm drinking this milk full of calcium, I'm getting all the calcium, all of the rich goodness of calcium from the milk. And the answer is no, you're not. Because the pasteurization process kills the enzymes. The enzymes are what you have in order to utilize the calcium in the milk. So you're drinking the milk with the calcium that's been pasteurized and doesn't have the enzyme, and it passes through your body, and you get no nutritional value from it. But they're not lying to you. Deceiving you, they are. Lying to you, they are not. Milk is full of calcium. Number 12, milk enzymes are destroyed. Number 13, infants do not develop well on pasteurized milk. Neither do calves. If you bottle feed calves, they're always weak, undernourished runts, without exception. When you let a calf suck on the cow, they're always healthy, big, and vital. Same thing happens to humans. Same thing happens to cats. A guy by the name of Pottinger fed pasteurized milk to cats, and in four generations they were sterile. You're wondering why you've got so many sodomites and homosexuals in the land? Well, guess no more. Pasteurized milk. Put two and two together, boys and girls, and wake up and smell the coffee. 14. Children and infants thrive better on raw milk. 15. Pasteurized milk is more likely to lead to decay in teeth. Wonder why you got bad teeth? It's because you're not getting any calcium out of your milk. 16. The pasteurized milk is more likely to be constipating. 17. Pasteurization destroys the creaming ability of milk. 18. Pasteurization influences the composition of milk. 19. Pasteurization destroys the souring bacteria of milk so that milk, instead of souring normally, will putrefy if kept long enough. 20. Pasteurization kills the bacilli in milk and causes it to decompose when exposed to air. 21. Pasteurization destroys beneficent enzymes, antibodies, and hormones which take the life out of milk. Raw milk is a live food. Pasteurized milk is a dead food. Pasteurization may be carelessly done, therefore it is not infallible. Pasteurized milk may diminish resistance to disease, especially in young babies. It impairs your immune system. 24. The death from tuberculosis remains uniformly lower in rural areas where much milk is drunk raw than in cities where milk is pasteurized. And number 25, compulsory pasteurization would remove the stimulus to eradicate diseased animals from milking herds. 26. Pasteurized milk interferes with the proper development of the teeth and predisposes to dental caries. 27. Pasteurization would lead to an increase in infant mortality. 28. Pasteurization gives a false sense of security. Now, those are 28 reasons why we object to the pasteurization of milk. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 16, 20, 28 reasons why pasteurized milk is bad for you. Now, there are many others that we will not list, but the interesting and important point here is that all of these former objections to pasteurized milk are just as true today as they were when they were listed by Hall and Trout 15 years ago. Now, remember, that was 15 years ago before 1980, and that was 1965. Now, Hall and Trout go on in glowing terms to tell us how three generations have thrived on pasteurized milk and enjoy radiant health. But, they admit, with so many beliefs unfavorable to the pasteurization of milk, one is astounded that the process was ever introduced in the first place. The final acceptance of pasteurization by the consumer is little short of phenomenal, they say. The state of Massachusetts in 1908, recognizing that pasteurized milk was no longer a vital food, passed a law that required milk subjected to heating to be labeled heated milk in 1-inch black letters against a white background. But by 1950, raw certified milk became essentially non-existent in this country, except in three states. and the public was thoroughly convinced through massive advertising over the years that their original suspicions about pasteurized milk were unfounded, and that the pasteurization process was protecting them from rampant disease conditions. Holland Trout eulogized pasteurization of milk has attained a near perfection within a half century. Perhaps the greatest achievement lies in the acclaim of people of many nations for pasteurized household milk. Now, although Hall and Trout are extremely laudatory, in fact, wildly enthusiastic about the merits of the pasteurization of milk, they make some interesting comments when comparing the keeping quality of the two types of milk. They say, for instance, the influence on the keeping quality after pasteurization is often exaggerated. The chief organisms responsible for spoilage of pasteurized milk originate from pasteurization contamination. And they go on to quote other authors who concluded that the number of bacteria found in the milk gave absolutely no indication of how well pasteurized milk would keep. And as mentioned, the bacteria responsible for spoilage later are not the same bacteria that are found in raw milk. So the authors state apologetically, the effect of heat for minimum pasteurization intensity has generally very little significance except, of course, in the destruction of certain bacteria and enzymes. These certain bacteria and enzymes are absolutely vital to the production of nutritious and safe milk. They then go on to admit that because of the complexity of milk fat that we don't really know very much about, change, and it takes place due to the pasteurization process. And they say milk fat may be involved in many of the unknown effects of heat. Data bearing on the speculative effects of heat on the fat itself are scarcely existent. Now, boys and girls, do you remember in the Bible there's two places that say you shall eat no manner of fat? Well, the exception to that is butterfat. Butterfat. And God, in the design of milk cows, sheep, and goats, has placed an enzyme in the fat. It's in the cream. I mentioned that in the last program. When you heat the milk, you kill the enzyme. Now you eat the fat, and it plugs up your arteries, which is the same result that you get from eating fat in the hamburger at McDonald's. 30% of that hamburger patty is fat. And remember, now, we were told, you shall eat no manner of fat. And we were told, you shall not see the kid in his mother's milk. It's not against the law to eat goat meat. It's not against the law to eat goat. It's not against the law to drink the milk. It's against the law to boil the kid in milk. And why is that? Because it kills the enzyme in the milk that is absolutely necessary for you to digest it. Being unable to digest the milk, it builds up in your arteries and gives you cardiovascular disease. Well, now, isn't that just real special? And let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not eight schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. And they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. We should also give a plug to the author. His name is William Campbell Douglas, M.D., with a foreword by Robert S. Mendelson, N.B. Now, this Robert Mendelson, who wrote the foreword, also wrote a series of books dealing with medicine and health. One of them is called How to Raise a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Pediatrician. You can get Mendelson's books from any health food store. Here's another good one here. This Milk of Human Kindness may be in your local health food store. And it may not be under the title The Milk of Human Kindness. Look for the author's name, William Campbell Douglas. And you can find Douglas with a with a search, like a Google search or Yahoo or somebody. Just plug in the name William Campbell Douglas and you'll find his website. And on his website, you'll find a number of books. This guy is very humorous. He's easy reading, funny as all get up. I mean, it's almost as good as reading Mad Magazine. And this is called The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized. It's got a new title. I don't have his new book. But he talks about the degenerative diseases that have been caused by the pasteurization. Talks about ice cream. It's just full of... I'll read you the index over here of the chapters. You know, what the wrong kind of milk can do to you, what the right kind of milk can do for you, milk for a long life, milk as medicine, milk for weight control. Yellow cows, utter destruction part two, utter propaganda, a cow is not a cat. Milking the Good Guys, Altadena Dairies, Utter Menace, Homogenization of Milk, Utter Folly, Utter Perfection, This Greasy Counterfeit, that deals with margarine and other fats, Utterly Effective, Milk as Medicine, Let Them Eat Steak and Ice Cream. Every chapter just filled with all kinds of laughs and humor. As he points out, a deadly serious subject matter of the distinction now between pasteurized and raw milk, and the deception that has come into play, like the George Orwell story on 1984. They've actually deceived you into believing that pasteurized milk is good for you, when in fact that's what's killing about 500,000 people a year. And they're telling you that raw milk is bad for you, when in reality, raw milk is good for you, and that's why God gave you a land of milk and honey. But God did not give you a land of dirty milk and dirty honey. I mean, there's some responsibility that you and I have. And as milk producers, we have a duty to produce clean, whole, raw milk. And when we were producing dirty raw milk, we killed a lot of people. And then instead of cleaning up our milk, we pasteurized it so that we could continue the practice of producing dirty milk. But now we'll boil it, kill the bacteria so you don't die from typhoid, you die from heart attack and stroke instead. Well, now, isn't that just real special? Yes, that comes from your local dairy association. Now, the protein casein is also affected by pasteurization. The effects of this on the human body are totally unknown. And they also report that the chief serum proteins of milk, lactobumin and lactoglobulin, are both adversely affected by high heat treatment of milk. And although the authors admit to the deficiencies of certain vitamins and minerals found in pasteurized milk, they turn to other authorities to reassure us that the changes are negligible. They quote K. et al., the original suggestion that pasteurization seriously diminished the nutritive value of milk has been proved conclusively to be ill-founded. Enzymes are still little understood as far as their contribution to human nutrition is concerned, but undoubtedly they play an important part. The authors make little of enzymes and report that a large number of enzymes are completely destroyed in the process of pasteurization. They attribute little importance to this and point out that the complete destruction of the enzyme phosphatase is one method of testing to see if the milk has been adequately pasteurized. Phosphatase is essential for the absorption of calcium, but the complete destruction of phosphatase is the aim of pasteurization. So remember what I said a little earlier. The milk is full of calcium, but in order for you to absorb the calcium into your body, you have to have the enzyme phosphatase, which is destroyed in the pasteurization process. Now, the allopathic medical regimen does not place very much emphasis on nutrition as a condition of good health. Now, there are some of us out here that believe that nutrition is absolutely essential to good health. In the Bible, we find God directing us toward certain foods and away from other foods because they cause bad health or they cause good health. So God in the Bible is one of those that believes that nutrition is essential for good health. And I believe that God was correct and that the American Dairy Association is wrong. That's my conclusion. That's just my personal opinion. Now, the chemistry of calcium in human nutrition is much better understood today than when the phosphatase test was introduced. This decalcification of milk, which is fed to children, may be a major cause of osteoporosis later in life. And we now know that low calcium absorption in healthy women may cause a loss of spinal bone mass as early as age 20. And such women may lose 50% or more of their bone mass by the age of 70. So if you've been watching TV, you'll see this nice young woman come on and she says, "Now, I've got osteoporosis and it runs in my family." And what these people haven't figured out is, I have osteoporosis because I drank pasteurized milk, which is what my family gave me and what my family drank, and that's why we all have osteoporosis. I mean, come on, guys, can we wake up and smell the coffee here? Are we suffering from the terminal stupids? That's why I'm reviewing this book, because it's my contention that we are suffering from the terminal stupids here. And while it is true that dirty raw milk is bad for you, clean raw milk is good for you. But instead of producing clean raw milk, we are producing dirty pasteurized milk. And the dirty pasteurized milk is bad for you. That's the moral to this story. Now, other factors which contribute to this literal dissolving of the skeleton are the high phosphates in cola drinks and many food diets, such as the Scarsdale diet, which is notoriously low in calcium. And the high-protein diets also accelerate calcium excretion. Now, when you add other calcium-wasting problems such as vitamin D and vitamin C deficiency, alcoholism, antacids, anticoagulants, anticonvulsants, barbiturates, cortisone, diuretics, and smoking, it's no wonder that Grandma is falling on her face from a fractured hip. The enzyme LAPS, or the lipase, or lipase, L-I-P-A-S-E. Let me try that one again. The enzyme, and it's pronounced lipase, I believe, is also totally destroyed by the pasteurization process. Lipase aids in the digestion of fats. Homogenization, the pulverizing of milk fat, causes more lipase to be released into the milk. So Hall and Trout tell us the complete destruction of lipase is imperative, otherwise the milk becomes rancid. No lipase for fat digestion. No phosphatase for calcium absorption. No galactase for milk sugar digestion. No catalase, disatase, or peroxidase, but the authors conclude the healthfulness of people enjoying high per capita consumption of pasteurized milk attests to the maintenance of its nutritive value. I mean, you talk about insanity here. Boys and girls, come on, let's wake up and smell the coffee. You pasteurize the milk, you kill all of the enzymes, of which there are several different types. These several different types of enzymes are required for digestion of the sugar, digestion of the fat, for the absorption of the calcium. And while it's true that 5 minutes after you drink a glass of milk, you don't fall over dead, it is not true that this milk is good for you. It takes a long time for pasteurized milk to kill you. For instance, I left the ranch in 1964, drank pasteurized milk for 20 years. It gave me a heart attack in 20 years. Now, it is true that heart attack is very common in the Gordon family, our branch of the Gordon family. But it's also very true that our family was also very, very heavy into alcohol, antacids, and smoking, and fat consumption. And like the lady on TV who's telling you that she's got osteoporosis, and it runs in her family. Well, we have heart attack, and it runs in our family, and it runs in our family because of our bad eating habits. So starting with Doc Lester in 1984, I stopped drinking pasteurized milk, stopped smoking, stopped drinking to excess. And all of a sudden, I'm the first Gordon in five generations to live to be age 70. So I think that diet has a tremendous amount to do with health. A tremendous amount. Now, going on here, in the late 1930s, the system of clarification was added to the milk processing business. This clarifier is used basically to clean up debris, you know, things like manure, pus, and other foreign material that's in the milk as a result of sloppy manufacturing methods. Now, this pus in the milk is also known as mastitis, and it's a heavy, pussy stuff that comes out of the cow's udder through the teats. And I don't know what the bacteria count is, but we give them penicillin for it. That's what we used to do. You know, when that stuff is in the milk, you know, it has to be cleaned out. And so, you know, to manufacture this product, milk is one of the highest manufacturing processes in the food industry. I mean, this stuff is, You could run this stuff through a chemical plant, you know, like they do petroleum, like an oil refinery. The milk processing process is like an oil refinery. We take this raw product, which is wholesome and nutritious, and then we run it through this process. And when we get through with it, we have a veritable sterile process or product. I was in a store one day, you know, when I'm out on the road, sometimes I like to buy half and half when I run out of milk, you know. Well, I went into the store and I bought some half and half, you know, to pour on my cornflakes. And as is my habit, every once in a while I look at the expiration date on it. And the expiration date, now this is about May, say. The expiration date said 11 September. And I thought, oh my God, something's wrong here. You can't have a quart of half and half that you just bought out of the grocery store with an expiration date of September the 11th, and this is the month of May. That would include all of June, July, and August. No, it wasn't incorrect at all. It was called ultra-pasteurized. Ultra-pasteurized milk has a shelf life of 3 months plus. Now, boys and girls, if you want to drink something that has a shelf life of many, many months, that's fine. And it won't kill you today. But to call that food, I think, is a misnomer. But it is a very highly processed, industrialized product. Something on the order of WD-40, you know. Now, Hall and Trout state that the centrifugal clarification of milk was early frowned upon by officials who suspected the process would be used to clean up dirty milk. But they say research showed that clarification was necessary to prevent the sedimentation found even in aseptically produced milk, which was the result of settling out of leucocytes in milk, which had been homogenized. Now, the average reader would not know what leucocytes are, so let me tell you. Leukocyte is pus. You know the stuff that you get in a zit when you squeeze the pimple on your face and it pops out on the mirror? Okay, that's called pus. Well, scientists call that leukocytes. Well, these leukocytes that are in your milk, which come from the come from the cow's udder when they have mastitis, we got to do something with that. So, you know, we centrifuge and we filter the milk so we can get that stuff out. Now, here on the farm, I don't have mastitis, but once in a while it'll show up, and we call it gargut. And what that tells me when I see a cow with gargut is that the cow has pus in her milk. Do we want to drink pus in our milk? I mean, you don't squeeze your zit, pop it on the mirror, and then reach over with your finger and scrape it off the mirror and then lick it off your finger, do you? Okay, well now, with that in mind, let's see what we should do with a cow with mastitis. First thing we do is we take the milk and feed that to the cats, or we dump it out to the chickens. And then we feed that cow vinegar because her pH body balances out of kilter. By feeding her vinegar, her body's immune system will take the vinegar and it'll re-establish her pH to the neutral zone, and then that her body will clear up that pus in her milk. And then we don't use that milk for 5 days until we know that that milk is clean again. So that's the way we do it. In order to produce clean, wholesome, raw milk, you know, we have to produce it. You can't clean it up after the fact. No, but that's not what they do in the dairy industry. Just because we've got mastitis, just because we got pus in the milk, doesn't mean we're going to throw the milk out to the chickens. We're going to clean it up, and then we're going to sell it to you people out there in the form of pasteurized, homogenized milk. And that's what I'm objecting to here, is using the pasteurization and homogenization and clarification process to clean up dirty milk. I don't think dirty milk can be cleaned up. I don't think it ought to be cleaned up. I think it ought to be dumped out to the chickens. And that we should produce clean milk to start with. And then when you got clean milk, then you just run it through the process. And then that's what you and I should be drinking. And that's what Campbell Douglas is pointing out here in his book. William Campbell Douglas. Get that down again. Called The Milk of Human Kindness. So this clarification product or process is for the purpose of removing the pus. That's right, just plain pus. With the onset of homogenization, a very undesirable situation developed. This leukocyte pus was noted to settle to the bottom of the bottle and make a grayish, oil-like sludge. Now, one cannot sell milk with a pus layer in the bottom, and as almost all milk is now homogenized, something had to be done to get this out. So the clarification process was instituted. The sediment removed by the clarification process is called in the milk trade slime, and that's exactly what it is. It is slime. One reason for the accumulation of pus and other slime elements in the milk is the current method of delivering milk to the processing centers. The milk may be picked up at the farm daily, but it goes into a holding tank and it's only bottled 3 times a week. It may be 4 or 5 days old when it's finally bottled. Now, if it wasn't clarified, the pasteurized at the processing center, it would be a lethal brew on delivery to the supermarket. So, you know, it has to do, boys and girls, with shelf life. It doesn't have anything to do with nutrients or nutrition. So if you think that the dairymen or the Midwestern Dairy Association or somebody like that, or Golden State Dairies or Borden Incorporated or something like that, is concerned about nutrients in the milk, perish the thought. It has nothing to do with nutrients. It has everything to do with shelf life. Now, raw milk will keep for 7 days. And the thing that makes milk go sour is the growth of the bacteria. Refrigeration is very important. If the milk gets too cold, then the cream will separate from the milk. So you've got to store it at about 38 to 40 degrees. That's the ultimate. The very best temperature. And then it'll keep for 7 days. And every day the milk's flavor changes because the number of bacteria per cubic centimeter increases. Bacteria is growing in the milk. By the time it's about 7 days old, this is raw milk now, raw milk. By the time it's about 7 days old, it's got a flavor to it that's bordering on sour. It's getting more and more sour. My wife doesn't want raw milk after 5 days. When it's 5 days old, she says, "Ah, this is no good." I can drink it up to 7 days. Then it sours. Then you have sour milk. Pasteurized milk will keep 14 days. Can you see how important this is? 14 days is much better for the marketing and the manufacture and the sale of milk than is 5 days. I mean, you know, if you're going to buy raw certified milk, you got to get yesterday's milk today because it's already a day old, and now it's only going to keep for 3 or 4 more days, you know, to where it really tastes good. So that's raw, live, healthful milk, and it degenerates very rapidly. That's why we have pasteurization. Hey, I'm out of time here, boys and girls. I've got to give you a final reminder that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. O-R-G. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.